From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on Tuesday when members of Rochester City Council voted unanimously to allow the city to apply for $4.7 million in state funding to help develop Parcel 5. The development of Parcel 5 has seen major setbacks since the FBI launched an investigation of the Morgan Company, the development firm that was heading up the then-proposed Performing Arts Center and apartment tower. And now the city is essentially back to square one. The Warren administration has expressed interest in modeling Parcel 5 after Kansas City Live, an entertainment district flanked by restaurants and bars that hosts year-round events, sports broadcasts, concerts. Community members have expressed strong opinions about what they would like to see at Parcel 5. There are advocates for public green space, a site for artists, something similar to the outdoor green public event space in Columbus, Ohio, called Columbus Commons. We've heard frequently on this program that, above all, community members want to be involved in the conversation about the site, and they're pushing back against the top-down approach that some say the city has taken in the past. This hour, we hear from some of those community members and activists who are going to share their visions for Parcel 5, and we also want to hear from you. What's the best fit now for the space as we consider Rochester's future? I'd like to welcome our guests in studio. Welcome back to Ray Matrano, who is a working artist advocating for development without displacement. Ray Ray, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Rachel DeGuzman, who's president of 21st Century Arts and founder of Woke Art Collaborative. That's W-O-C. Woke Art Collaborative, welcome back to you. Nice having you.
Thank you for having me.
Mary Lupien is an activist and someone who is a candidate for Rochester City Council this coming fall. Mary, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks. Excited to be here.
And Ben Welk is a principal at Slow Road Consulting. Welcome back to you as well.
Thanks so much for having us.
Well, this week we saw council at least make a move to say, you know, we're going to go ahead and give the green light for the city to apply for more funding to develop Parcel 5. And I want to go around the table, and I'm going to start with Mary Lupien, because if you win your election in November, and you do have an opponent, Dave Sutliff-Ades, who will be on this program as well in the future as a member of the Green Party. But if you win that election, you're going to be part of city council. What would you have voted this week, and what do you want to see happen at Parcel 5, Mary?
Well, I'm not as concerned by the vote because it's really just a broad outline of what they might like to see in the future, and it's getting a hold of money that we can utilize, and we don't have to utilize out of it. It's just the state provides 20%, and we provide 80%. So even if it gets scaled back, it's, you know, we're not locked into anything. So I would have voted for the application to go through. But what worries me is a seeming attachment to the KC Live type model, which you mentioned, to me feels overbuilt and top down. And I'm really advocating for kind of a phased approach. You know, let's put grass down, let's some movable elements like tables and chairs, and see what the space, you know, evolves to be, while holding a robust community discussion about what we want, what this space central to our city is going to be.
Do you want a single developer in charge there?
No.
Okay. Have you seen any proposals in the past that you want to bring back to the table for discussion right now?
I think the closest is the Visionary Square proposal that we saw, because it has some of the same elements. You know, it has the retail space around the edges, you know, room for food trucks. And I really think maybe it wasn't part of Visionary Square, but that a permanent stage makes sense. I've heard a figure quoted that it costs the city $20,000 every time to put up a stage and take it down. So I think we use the space enough as an entertainment venue that it makes sense to have that kind of as a permanent element.
Okay. Ben Welk, a principal at Slow Road Consulting and someone who has been actively involved in proposals such as Visionary Square in the past here. What do you make of city council at least moving forward with this application for more funding to develop Parcel 5, and what do you want to see now there?
I think we're at a really fantastic point in the history of this conversation. I know it was probably over 2 years that we first began these talks. And
feels like about 20.
It does. It does. And the site in some ways hasn't been at the level of activity it should have been for 20 years. But I agree with Mary on many points. You know, Visionary Square was, for people that don't know the history, was one of four RFPs that was put in. During the RFP process, it was the only proposal that actually called for a true public space model with different elements of it. But that incremental approach was very important, called out. The whole proposal was under $1 million at the time. And the very first things it called for was to actually put grass on Parcel 5. And just echoing what's already been spoken, I think, you know, before we get too far down the road, before we create something that dictates the space in one kind of hardscape fashion, I think what we really should be doing is maximizing what's already there. We have a site that's currently gravel and dust, and it has gathered tens of thousands of people, and it's become a hot topic of conversation. So just even elemental and basic improvements are going to just add to the current experiences that are ongoing, and then we can continue to build from there.
How about a permanent stage, as Mary suggests?
I like some form of that. I think the versatility of the space is what comes to mind. I think my greatest concern and fear is that we're going to create something that doesn't have the interplay to the nearby surroundings. I think there's a natural backdrop of those city buildings, which has proven spectacular in the photos that you've seen and when you're standing there and you're encountering those experiences. So what I would like to see is something that would be retractable to just maximize, you know, what do we want? A permanent stage that's going to sit there unused on the day-to-day. We have to maximize that daily use to create a place of belonging and comfort for the people of Rochester as well. So I vote retractable stage.
Rachel DeGuzman, what have you made of the process leading up to this point, and what do you want to see next at Parcel 5?
The process, to me, is disconnected, and I think that's my main criticism for so much of what we do in Rochester. It's not part of a master plan. So even when you're addressing whether it's viable or whether it's going to be something that actually connects with the people, absent a true master plan for some place like that that's interconnected with everything else we're doing, whether it be skate parks or whatever else, I find that to be a difficult to think it's going to be successful. And if you look at the lack of success before, it's that it wasn't so connected and inclusive of the community. Because even though there was a lot, you know, there was a scandal that actually put an abrupt end to things, they were not being successful in raising the money either. So I think that moving forward, we have to actually look at how do we connect with a broader swath of the people in Rochester. I agree about the actual natural space and the environment, but what gets left out is the inclusiveness and equity of that space to a greater number of people in Rochester. And until we do that, even when you have progressive movements working towards something that's inclusive, often that leaves Black and brown people out. And I think that I'd love for, as we move forward, I think it's great to actually be thinking about how do we get some of the resources that we actually give to the state back here to do something. But I would hope that it would be a very inclusive process that actually goes beyond what's currently thought of as progressive.
Okay. Ray Matrano, what do you think?
Yeah, thank you for saying that. I think City Hall has caught on to the whole public space thing and how much capital they can concentrate downtown, but not actually the meaningful transformative process of actually engaging the community to envision and direct it themselves. There's been so much outpouring of people putting in hours and hours and hours of attempting to organize people and attempting to use that space and communicate with Rochester of how valuable public space can be. The Visionary Square proposal put out the facts that have been stated on this program a number of times that we're 2.5 acres per 1,000 people of public space in Rochester, and the National Parks and Recreation Services say we should be at 8 acres of public space per 1,000 people. So we should be doing all the public space we can get, and any public space vision without an accountable community design process is moot. We can't be looking at this Kansas City Live thing as just something they researched and found. The Cordish companies who developed Kansas City Live also developed the High Falls District approach 15 years ago. These are people shaking each other's hands. They're going down to Baltimore with the CEO of CGI, with Patrick Dutton, a developer, with Dave Krista, a developer, who were all behind the mayor back in October of 2018 when they announced the RBTL plan was being scrapped to go down the river. They're all at that press conference. They all flew down there with private and commercial jets in December. If you look up Brian Sharp's DNC article from December of 2018, you can read the dynamics of that. And speaking for myself as a working artist, working for public space but also development without displacement, the organizing around public space has not been accountable to what Rachel is alluding to intersecting gentrification, how redlining, how all this disinvestment makes it so you can't just say you want to park at Parcel 5. You actually need to understand that people living here who also want to park know that in 10 years, downtown might not be affordable for them. And if we don't have sustainable development without displacement policies in place, like putting in community benefits agreements, like community land trust emphasis, participatory budgeting, things like a public space at Parcel 5, even in Columbus Commons, Ohio, is just going to be for a bunch of post-suburban white people.
Have you looked at the website of Kansas City Live?
Of course, I've been
there.
Did
you see any, but on the website,
yeah.
Because I think that the way you present yourself matters. Did you see any black or brown people there? Mm. I looked at every page. And in there's only one page, it's subpage in there that says community, where you actually see a black person. Mm. The city is roughly, I think, 30-some percent people of color. I understand that, you know, I don't have all the details about who uses that space, but I think that the way you present yourself matters. And so when that's used as a model to something that's going to be created here, that's problematic to me.
Okay, and Ray Ray is showing us what Kansas City Live looks like.
Yeah, that looks super inclusive.
Well, I mean, listeners, you can look it up yourself. If you want to look up Kansas City Live, there's a number of pictures. Let me follow up on one point that Ray Ray is raising here and ask you a question that, you know, if you're in the room with city leadership or if you get a chance to kind of be one of the quote-unquote decision makers with this piece of land, I take the point that you're raising, which is that even if it was quote-unquote public space or green space or just, you know, grass and with maybe a stage, that if city policies lead to soaring rents and gentrification, that in pretty short order, it's going to be wealthy white people there anyway, even if it's meant to be more inclusive. I take that point. So setting aside the other policies, just looking at that space itself right now, do you want to see a permanent stage, as been suggested? Do you want to see primarily grass? I mean, is there something that does stand out to you right now?
Before this People for Parcel 5 movement that went through various iterations over the past couple years disbanded in the winter due to lack of diversity within the core group.
I was part of it at first.
Yeah. Ever since October of 2018, it transitioned into now it's not against a theater, it's for public space. We know most of the community wants public space there, but we need community process for determining that public space. It needs to be sodded, grassed, whatever, immediately to make it hospitable to usage. We know that the community wants to use it. There should be no development on Parcel 5. That means no developer-driven ideas dominating the media and attention on Parcel 5 without community process. And that means it doesn't matter what Ray Ray or Ben or Rachel or Mary thinks should go on Parcel 5 as far as the stage goes here, the landscaping goes here. I hear from people all the time. It's great. We need a community charrette. Maybe the Community Design Center can be paid to do that work. Maybe we need to build an alliance of businesses, downtown residents, developers, city leaders, neighborhood association presidents, people who live downtown, people without housing, to design that space together and make sure it's equitably addressing all of the systemic issues for it to be a true public space. So the process is more important than the product to me.
Well, it's going to be an interesting process now. And let me pull Ben back in here because, again, as someone who was involved with Visionary Square, you're one of four RFPs and essentially three because mm-hmm. what happened was one of the people behind one of the proposals ended up throwing their weight behind another. So you're one of three, right. Essentially, right? What was that like for you in terms of your interaction with city leadership and with those who might be the quote-unquote decision makers? Did you feel that it was open? Did you feel heard? Did you feel that it was the kind of process that felt like it was going to produce a result that was for the entire community, Ben?
It's a great question. I think in the general context, we absolutely felt like the smallest underdog in the room, if you will. We were up against multi-million dollar projects, and we were basically suggesting that people put a lawn on Parcel 5. The irony there is that that site has continued to function without anything.
It's essentially a lawn without grass.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But I think to your question, you know, I actually give the city of Rochester a lot of credit for hearing us. You know, I felt like we received equal treatment when we went to City Hall. You know, we brought a delegation. Obviously, Ken Sato was leading the vision of that, you know, Japanese immigrant, you know, not a citizen of this country. We had, you know, diversity on that group that came as part of that. And we were met by city officials in conversation in City Hall, and that was very important to be heard. And I definitely did not feel like walking out of that meeting and that presentation to the vice mayor or to the commissioner of downtown development. I didn't feel like walking out of that you know, we hadn't been respected or hadn't been heard. I felt the opposite. I felt like, you know, up against two other major developers, that we were being given a lot of credit, honestly, you know, a lot of credibility in our passion and our desire to say, we think that this should be an all-inclusive space. We think that this space should remain open and free to the public. And ultimately, you know, this has been my heart from the very beginning of this. You know, we need a place of belonging for all Rochesterians in the heart of downtown. And I think that this site, no matter what comes of it, offers that opportunity. And I think that minimally that sentiment is being shared here today.
Okay. And you know, Mary, if you're on city council, and the odds say you probably will be, though, again, we try to give credence to all people from all parties who are running for office. But if you win in November, you're going to be part of a city council that's got a lot of decisions to make here. Do you agree with Ray Ray's concern that if we, and certainly me, and I'm part of this, and the media over-focus on this one parcel of land, which I'm sure I've been guilty of, and we don't focus enough on city policy, that it sort of doesn't matter, that you can do Ben and Ken's proposal, you could do a park or green space or any of these, you know, sort of some flavor of that, but it really doesn't matter if city policy doesn't see a change that in regards to housing, in regards to who can live where.
In terms of it being inclusive,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. We, and just like Rachel was saying, it's disconnected. This parcel of land and this way we're going to approach development is connected to all of those other issues.
Absolutely.
We have to be thinking about how this is going to affect downtown. You know, it could increase gentrification. Unless, you know, and I think the community has to have a say in how we do this and own the process. And, you know, I get the mayor wanting to put her stamp on this. You know, she's not the first mayor. Bob Duffy wanted Renaissance Square. You know, everyone's wanted to kind of like have that center be their legacy, that center of downtown. But I would like to see the mayor put her stamp on this process to say, I'm the mayor who created this community process where the people developed this idea and they can have ownership of what this space becomes.
Mm. Okay. And it sounds like you don't think we're there yet.
No.
Okay. Rachel?
There are examples, though. I think that, you know, if we think of a 21st century, I'm from Detroit. And there are two places in particular that I can think of, Hart Plaza. And Detroit has all kinds of problems. I don't think I'm saying differently, but growing up there, there was Belle Isle and Hart Plaza. And Hart Plaza, Belle Isle, people at the yacht club and the boat club were there. But then you'd see people fishing with their fishing poles at the same place. If we can actually start visioning a 21st century Rochester specific vision that actually replicates things like that. And then you have Central Park and that same thing. So, I mean, it's not like this whole idea of a place that is accessible to multiple people and everybody that can come in. I mean, you have major concerts in some of these parks, you know, and they have, I know that there are festivals in parks. And this is a much smaller place. I understand that. But I think we are not dreaming big enough. And we're not really thinking out of the box enough about what kind of space we can actually replicate that happened in the 1800s. And there's spaces people still use, accessible to all.
Well, let me get some feedback from listeners who have maybe some specific or general ideas as we talk Parcel 5. And listeners, you can call the program. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. The joke's on you. This is a replay of a show from 2016, and no one knows the difference. That's not actually true. And frankly, as cheeky as that is to say that, I do think we've learned a lot in the last several years, and that's part of what we're talking about here. What we've learned as journalists, as we cover what this parcel means, not just in isolation, but in terms of connectivity, and what the people at the table have learned about the process and what they'd like to see next there. And you can email the program, connections@wxxi.org. Here's Allard on Twitter, who says, how about a park featuring a stage for summer shows? It would be great to have a Jazz Fest-like concert there every weekend in the summer. right direction or wrong direction? Ray Ray?
I think that person should be taking part in charrettes, taking part in the community organizing, that City Hall should be leading. As Mary has said, the legacy of this could be what an amazing, robust community process, a framework for engaging the civic vacuum that Rochesterians and every city and place in America is experiencing, the lack of connectivity that Rachel is talking about. This space is connected to all of that. It's a perfect space to gather people. I personally have learned so much about organizing and civic life in the past 2 years of my prodding around this issue personally as a working artist. So that person should be part of this, and so should everybody who wants to and doesn't have the time to. We need to get creative. And speaking as an artist, I think we need artists at every table in City Hall, in developing, in urban planning, in housing. We need to get those voices that are calling into the show organized, and City Hall is being paid by us to do that.
There was a moment in the recent Jazz Fest. I was out at on Gibb Street, the free stage, the outdoor stage. It was a pretty diverse crowd, and we were getting on board the love train. And I will say, I go out in public and I'm going to dance. If you see me in public, I'm going to be probably sweating and I'm going to be dancing and I'd make no apologies. Did I see you there? Were you on the love train?
At the Jazz Fest of recent?
Yeah.
With Trombone Shorty?
Yeah. Oh, not Trombone Shorty. It was like one of the weeknights, one of the free shows. So there was a guy who looked just like Ray Ray Matrano who was also on the love train.
I changed my appearance a lot, but...
No?
No.
It wasn't you?
I wasn't on the love train, but I usually am.
I was like, you know what? Ray Ray Matrano loves Rochester and he loves love. So love train, it was like logical. But all I want to say is...
But you're bringing up Jazz Fest at Parcel 5.
No, not at Parcel 5. This was on the Gibb Street stage.
The Gibb Street stage, yeah. Right. So what's free going space. On with that? Thank you for bringing up Jazz Fest. Why only one night out of the nine was that whole space used?
So you feel like that was a missed opportunity?
That little tent wedged on the side, that's a statement. That's saying, this is what you have. We're going to do this once, but why isn't all of Jazz Fest headquartered around Parcel 5? And to me, it's people shaking hands, people making transactions, and it's not what the community is asking for. They want to use that space.
That's interesting because a lot of people cite Jazz Fest as, well, this is a model of what it could become. But Ray Ray, you're saying you got a 9-day festival and you're doing it one time?
Yeah.
You can do it more.
But aren't there two different festivals? I think that's one of the things that people don't understand. There's Party in the Park produced work that the Jazz Festival organizers do help book. And then there's the Jazz Festival itself. They're two different things. So I think that when you're looking at how to expand something, you might want to be looking at how to expand Party in the Park.
Mm. Well, I
think this brings up a really vital point, which is that, you know, there are two levels of how this space can be impacted and curated. You know, there is the physical constructs. There's the grass, you know, permanent stage, retractable stage, you know, vendors, retailers, space, whatever it is, right? That's the physical. And then there's a programmatic. And that is as important as anything. And, you know, not to sound cheesy, but I think of Parcel 5 often is the canvas that Rochester can paint. And I think we need a central showcase of a space that we bring both out of town and residential performances and artists and makers and local businesses that have some sort of extension in that space, that is the showcase space where all of those things can come. And if anyone is coming from out of town, that's what a wonderful way to immerse them in an experience where they can actually, you know, feel our flavor.
But on an equitable basis. See, some of the problems that we have for local artists, we have brilliant artists here. When you have something like the Jazz Fest may pay you pay a whole lot of money to people that come from out of town. And then the local artists that actually can make more money outside of Rochester than here at home are treated like stepchildren or, you know, they're not really part of the real family. And that's just, and I mean that, I don't think stepchildren should be treated differently. I heard myself say that, and that comes out wrong. But what I mean is that we're not treating our local talent equitably. Yeah. And I think that's one of the problems, too, is when you have that programmer or that committee that programs a space, they have to start thinking differently and in more equitable 21st century terms about how you value the art that goes into the space. I think that's more important than the stage, even though I'm from performing arts. I love stages.
Yeah.
The committee has to be diverse themselves. Right. And one thing that I've noticed that's been absent in this conversation the whole time about Parcel 5 are the artists in Rochester who we say we want to be a vibrant part of that space, but they haven't been really engaged in the conversation.
Local artists aren't engaged in this process, which Ray Ray was talking about.
So do you think, Ray Ray, to Rachel's point, that local artists would feel that Fringe and the Jazz Festival have treated the local talent as lesser than compared to out-of-town acts?
Most certainly. I've been part of a group of artists who have been doing an artist sustainability survey on this very topic and the value in pay and community relationships that local Rochester artists of all mediums and approaches are part of. You know, big institutions aren't flexing the muscle of, we want to pay you for that talk you're giving at our cocktail party. We want to, you can be part of this. We're going to pay you for your labor, not just for the materials or this or that. We're going to, you know, those institutions, the big five, they need us to be part of their brand. And we are a powerful cultural body of people. The county has welcomed to Rochester, a vibrant place for the arts. The mayor, the city of the arts. We need to be a city for the arts, and to do so, we need to put artists in Rochester at the table of envisioning things like Parcel 5 and festivals that actually pay the artist to be part of it and not tell them, you're going to pay us for an application fee and bust your butt to make a show and make up for it in ticket sales. A very slim margin of Fringe Fest Rochester artists actually are able to cover their shows and production.
Very slim. Buffalo's doing better, frankly, in how they pay their artists.
And lastly, the AMI study that City Council approved that paid $60,000 to an Ohio-based surveyor to assess the impact of the Broadway Theater on Parcel 5. One of the things it cited was the lack of any sort of framework for funding the arts publicly or privately in Rochester, in the county, in the region. And that's what's incited a lot of recent arts funding organizing.
All right, so after our only break of the hour, we are going to get your feedback on this. And it comes from a wide range of ideas as we talk Parcel 5. If you're just joining us, Rochester City Council voted unanimously this week to allow the city to apply for $4.7 million in state funding to help develop Parcel 5, which has remained vacant, but that doesn't mean it's been unused. And we've seen a lot of conversation in the last 3 years, especially about what happens there. Of course, there was the RBTL and Bob Morgan project with a luxury apartment tower combined with a Rochester Broadway Theater League space that fell apart for various reasons. And so now it's kind of a back to the drawing board situation. You just heard Ray Matrano, who's a working artist and advocating for development without displacement. Rachel DeGuzman is president of 21st Century Arts and the founder of Woke Art Collaborative. Ben Welk is a principal at Slow Road Consulting. Mary Lupien is an activist and a candidate for Rochester City Council. And we'll get back to your feedback after this short only break of the hour. Coming up in our second hour, it's the Summer of Food on Connections, and we take a look at food as art. We're talking to local chefs, food and drink really as art. We're wondering about drink makers and sommeliers and those who prepare the meals that we enjoy when we go out to eat. Is food fuel, or can food be art too? We'll talk about it. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Bob in East Rochester first on the phone. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, Evan, I'm hearing everything, which is fine. I really agree with the panel here. The issue is you're dealing with the city of Rochester that recent history says can't throw a Tupperware party. Look at what the city's doing throughout its history with the Fast Ferry, Salem Stadium. It's got no locker rooms. I mean, they destroyed Midtown, and then, Windstar pulled on out? If you can get City Hall, City Council, leadership in the mayor's office on the same page and quit fumbling the football, this is doable. Until then, you're spinning your wheels.
All right, Bob, thanks for the phone call. Is anybody want to agree or disagree that he thinks the city is sort of inept at putting anything together right now?
I don't agree.
You don't agree?
I do not.
No, it sounds like he's not from the city, and I think we're doing a lot of things right.
I think there's been a lot of recent change and recent improvement. My overall feeling is that the city of Rochester as a whole is trending in good directions, but there's always room for improvement. I think this Parcel 5 has been certainly a particular thorn in the side for many people, and I think that needs improvement based on the discussion we're having today.
Well, go ahead, Ray.
Yeah, this is not about our mayor. This is not about elected officials. This is a systemic issue. Mm-hmm. This is a destabilized city that was white disinvested decades ago, and you need to look up redlining, and you need to look up what gentrification means and what all the foreclosures and suburban home buyers that are collecting all these houses waiting to cash in. You need to look at these things as connected and how they've destabilized our education. Our Rochester City School District is connected to this. It's all connected. It's all systemic oppression. And we have a destabilized city that now people from the suburbs who left decades ago are trying to capitalize on, and that's creating a big confusion, and we have to stand up for what will bring about development without displacement and acknowledge that it's not just one person's vision that is going against what everybody wants. It's a systemic issue.
And I think that's a critical part of it when we're promoting things like that. Like if, you know, my son's a fellow at the Avenue Black Box Theater, you know, certainly there wasn't anything happening like the Avenue Black Box Theater on Joseph Avenue before it happened. So I think when you look at the big picture, there is a lot happening that's really positive in Rochester.
He invoked Salem Stadium, which if you're a member of city council, you may have to weigh in on the future of that kind of a building, mm-hmm. either in what the city should or shouldn't do, what money it should or should not spend. Has that been mismanaged, Mary?
The stadium?
Yeah.
It hasn't been managed well. I think we could all agree with that.
But you're not going to draw a conclusion the same way Bob, the caller, is saying, look at this, therefore we shouldn't trust the city to make a decision.
No, and some of the stuff he's bringing about was years ago. The Fast Ferry is, you know, quite a while ago. And so
15 years ago.
Every development conversation that somebody disagrees with is going to end up with them citing the Fast Ferry.
Yeah, that's
and
kind
it's
of
about,
the rule
and it's about time that we get over it. We need to stop being afraid, and we need to move on and think
and learn
more
from
optimistically
it.
With more vision.
Embrace mistakes.
But I do think that, you know, the key here is how we can learn from our mistakes of the past is to really engage the public, and that historically, even with High Falls, gigantic top-down solutions haven't really worked for our city. So I would like to think we've learned from those mistakes of the past and to really, you know, do a robust community discussion on this big investment.
Let me get one more quick email, and that's from Max, who says, Evan, my wife and I recently traveled to Syracuse. Armory Square there has retail and restaurants. In May, we went to Burlington after our wedding with a busy downtown and popular retail and an array of restaurants. Ithaca, one of our favorite towns, has the Commons. Rochester is lacking with a downtown space with things to do other than food and drink. Whenever we go out of town, we look for retail options, plus fancy and other basic food options. Park Avenue just doesn't cut it, in my opinion. Gainesville has Bo Diddley Plaza, which is a beautiful concert space, plus green space with food and coffee bars. Granted, they have better weather, yes. That is from Max, looking at other cities and what he thinks Rochester's lacking, and he zeroes in on something other than food and drink. Let's just briefly hit that. What do you think, Ben?
Well, I think all the cities he cited, there's another key example there, which is more critical than the retail. That's pedestrian spaces. And I've been to, I think, almost every city on the list that he mentioned, and the takeaway there is that you have a core area that's designed to walk in, and you have greater connection with the things around you because of that. In Rochester, we still don't have, you know, I was involved in creating the first parklet in the city of Rochester up on University Avenue, but we have a lot of other things that we need to do. You know, the traffic calming, the Piano Keys crosswalk just received national recognition. Those are the placemaking ideas that we need to push into, and we need to create a pedestrian scale city that is accessible to everybody, because you don't need a car to access it. You don't have to drive to access it. You can utilize public transit, and you can use a walkable city, but spaces where people can stay at the pedestrian scale and have that level of interaction and interpretation with the city.
And a lot of those solutions don't cost a whole lot of money. Right. They're very cheap.
Close the road. Pave Andrew Langston Way next to Parcel 5 and turn it into a pedestrian way, Gibbs Street.
How do you feel about the email?
So I'm just going to disrupt that a little bit, because I still think that those spaces are not inclusive. Mm-hmm. And so to me, the solutions are, they have to be different. And we need to be thinking broader than that. And also, as much as I talk about Parcel 5 and think about it and think it's important that we also need to be thinking about all the other neighborhoods in Rochester and how you, that's one of the ways you create inclusivity, and also don't have the tremendous burden of this one parcel being everything to everybody in Rochester. So when I say think differently, I really think that connected plan needs to be had.
Okay. Ray, what would you say to the email, Max?
Yeah, I mean, just going off of what Rachel is saying, I think one of the best things that have been done on Parcel 5 in the last few years is when a group, a coalition of land use advocates, took it over on Earth Day of 2018 and got and organized over 30 groups to endorse and table there and had a pop-up festival that was unpermitted intentionally. It was creative activism, not just to say we want public space for Parcel 5, but we've been working to develop land use policies in all neighborhoods, in Plex, in Cobbs Hill. All around, we need to be looking at these policies that will reflect what we want at Parcel 5 and make it the vision of everyone in the city. You know, the Plex neighborhood is increased with the tension of the Brownfield and the University of Rochester wanting to build dorms there. You know, they're part of the Parcel 5 discussion. The Cobbs Hill folks that are trying to keep that tower from being built in a park and encroaching on parkland, they're part of the discussion. So many more unheard neighborhood groups are part of this discussion and need to be envisioning not just Parcel 5, but everything like it in all different degrees around the city.
Let me bring in Mitch Gruber, a member of City Council, who's on the line with us. Councilman, how are you? Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm sorry I couldn't make it into the studio today.
We invited every member of Rochester City Council, and some replied, didn't hear from all, but did get a statement from Council Member Elaine Spall, which I can read in a moment. Mitch, from your perspective, what do you want to see happen at Parcel 5? A lot of the talk has been on not just what goes there or doesn't go there, but also the process and who's involved. What needs to happen next?
Yeah, I don't want to avoid the question, but I do want to start with something a little bit. I want to step back a little bit. I only heard the first kind of introduction of the show, then I had to duck away for a moment. But I heard Rachel talking about the lack of a master plan. And I think that I apologize if this was mentioned while I wasn't listening, but I think right now we are, and I mean right now, we are in the middle of a very, very unique opportunity. We are on the verge. Council will be asked to adopt a new comprehensive plan for the first time in almost a decade. I think one of the biggest issues this city has had in the past, basically in my entire adult life, is that we have not had a comprehensive plan adopted since Mayor Johnson adopted Renaissance 2010, which was back in 1999. I was 14 years old. It is, it is crazy to think that a city like us wouldn't have a comprehensive plan for that long. And I give this administration a ton of credit for reinvigorating a planning department and developing a really, really excellent draft of the comp plan. And right now, it is in the public input process. There is an entire space, many, many pages dedicated to placemaking. And I think it's really important for the folks who are both on the panel there and the people who are listening to make sure to comment on the comp plan and make sure that their vision for public space and places like Parcel 5 is embedded within that plan. We will adopt it at some point later this year.
Okay. Rachel, does that satisfy you?
I think it's a great step forward. We talk about all these different, people say that this show was from 2016. Well, it's not because we're not working hard, but we also, nobody would run a business where they didn't start from a plan. And so to move forward as a city, I think it's critical.
Okay. Mitch, is there something that stands out to you about the kind of development that ought to be there? We every time we talk about this, whether it's from the public or members of the city administration, people have invoked Kansas City Live as an idea. Does that stand out, or are there other ideas that stand out to you, Mitch?
You know, I haven't seen Kansas City Live. I think that one of my concerns about it is that it seems to be tethered pretty closely to the professional sports that exists in Kansas City, which obviously we don't have. And so I'm not sure how replicable that model is specifically. I do think that what the CFA application that that Mayor Warren and her administration put forward is asking to do is to get ready to do some design and planning around something that is akin to the KC Live experiment, which I think is a very viable thing for us to explore. But to be perfectly honest, Evan, my personal question, and it's a question that I would pose to the guests you have and the listeners and anyone else, is, you know, at one point the conversation was we need density downtown because density is what allows for retail to exist. And I heard this more and more in the last year when, you know, one of the things that was most heartbreaking to me about our city in the last year, just to be honest, was Hearts closing. I want to see a downtown grocery store exist. I want to see it thrive. And I think one of the reasons why it closed is because of a lack of density. So as much as, you know, I am someone who goes, I went to the Jazz Fest every night. I saw people down there. I love the way our city comes alive. I give a ton of credit to the folks there who have been working on the Visionary Square proposal for many, many years. But I am also wondering, you know, do we want as a city to build density? Do we want to encourage density because that is the way we're going to have stores like groceries be able to stay open? And that's a question that I have not yet answered for myself, and I'm hoping that the comprehensive plan eventually kind of leads us to an answer like that.
Councilman, thanks for taking the time. We appreciate it, and I know there's going to be a lot more to talk about on the subject of Parcel 5. Thank you, Mitch.
My pleasure. Thanks, everyone, for your time.
That's Mitch Gruber, a member of Rochester City Council. Let me read a statement that we did receive from Councilmember Elaine Spall on the subject of Parcel 5. She writes, quote, "The importance of the Parcel 5 site for our center city cannot be overstated. It is a site that has prompted an enormous and welcome citizen input as to the need for public space, open and green space, and a presence that reflects what a growing and vibrant city may need. The legislation passed this week to provide the opportunity for state funding should be considered a first step, not the last step. And this council has repeatedly asked for more public input and council involvement should the funding from the state become a reality. More than ever across our city, neighbors, residents, and stakeholders are expressing their interest and sharing their voices about what our city needs, how our center city can grow carefully, and with all who might enjoy the space. This public involvement is important, and I know over my last 12 years on City Council, those voices have become stronger and more informed on many city projects. It is my hope and my expectation that the conversation on the highest and best use of Parcel 5 will continue to be honored by City Council and the administration. Anything less would lack diligence and care." That's member of Rochester City Council, Elaine Spall. So when you talk, Rachel, about the lack of overall inclusion in the process of trying to look forward for the city on Parcel 5, who's most to blame for that? Who, were you got to lay that at the door of City Council, the mayor's administration? Who?
Systemic racism is the problem. Yeah. And I think unless we disrupt that in our planning processes, we'll do the same thing and replicate it over and over again. I'm not blaming any one administration or any one person. I think that, and you know, you say, how can you have a black female mayor and have that happen? She's working in a system. This is not a criticism of any one person.
To be clear, she was saying that the general you might say that. I would not raise that question.
No, I wasn't saying
any of that could be possible. Sure.
You did. I'm just saying that I think that it's ineffective for us to start looking at institutions or people that exist today in that way and say, it's your fault or it's your fault. It's important that we take steps and we actually start then benchmarking cities and organizations that are actually doing the work well, and see how we can actually create a process here in Rochester that starts doing that and not really look back and say, oh, this was terrible and that was terrible. It's really much more important to me that as we're moving forward that we actually have the kind of processes and inclusion that really matters. And I do think that it would be successful for the city because if you look at successful, Central Park was a huge investment. Belle Isle in Detroit, Hart Plaza. When you look at successful inclusion, there are models that exist at how that happened. And so I don't think Rochester has to be different, but we're not there yet.
John called in to say he wanted to correct the record about Jazz Festival. I'll just read John's comments. One, the Parcel 5 tent had shows every night of the week. Two, it's an international jazz fest, not a local jazz fest. And three, one of the most popular events at Jazz Fest is the after-hours jam session that is hosted by a local. That's from John. So that's the way you would all, Ray Ray. I know you're one of the critics of.
That's fair. I want to respond with Councilmember Mitch Gruber, I think the analogy of Hartz is perfect for Parcel 5. Why did Hartz fail?
He said a lack of density.
A lack of density. I don't think so. I think it involves, if you're looking at a grocery store, which is a space, it's a building. If you have a meaningful process of organizing that grocery store and creating relationships with the community around it, you're going to have a successful grocery store. And in my opinion, if in the same way of Parcel 5, if you wanted it to be at a successful space, you need to have that ownership of that land be in the city, and you need to have an alliance of people who represent the city creating that public space in the same way a grocery store and how community-owned and operated food co-ops work and are able to disrupt how small groceries essentially just become convenience stores selling beer and cigarettes because they can't afford the wholesale. They can't afford to price things the way Wegmans can because they buy so much wholesale. Well, you start a buying club. You organize your community. You make it accessible to be a member. That's not Abundance Food Co-op's model. That's why their prices are not affordable to most of Rochester. I'm talking about a vision that needs to be accountable. And I think looking at why Hartz failed, it's a venture capitalist cash in of the local branding of a grocery store. We could fail our public space at Parcel 5 in the same way if we let capital dictate what happens there and not people.
But that's an idea of that's an example of where the lack of inclusion matters, mm-hmm. because the density that that sometimes people are thinking about are people that have cars and actually can go to Whole Foods, Wegmans, and other places. Right. There are other people who really are desperately in need of having access to food. And so density, when we're thinking of density, what do we really mean? And I think that is applicable also to Parcel 5 and what will be successful there.
And you have to look at the location of Hartz. We have a bustling downtown center where people come in and out of the transit center, and Hartz was not located near there. And so, again, we're talking about people who have cars to get to Hartz who could easily go somewhere else that has cheaper prices. So, you know, another thing we have to think about in our city planning is where are we locating services and are they near a bus line or a place where people can easily walk to? Because we can't just be thinking about cars because that's also not very inclusive.
As we get ready to wrap in our last 3 minutes or so, Mary Beth writes in and says, she wants to understand why does your guest, I assume, Rachel, she's talking about you. You've talked a lot about inclusion and making sure whatever the ideas are, there are a lot of people are at the table. But essentially all of our guests have agreed on that. But Mary Beth says, why does your guest feel that these ideas being discussed aren't inclusive? I would like to hear her ideas. How would you respond to that?
I mean, just on quickly, they're not. The people who are giving input aren't inclusive, and I would say that from a race perspective, but I would also say from income, education perspective, and we can't assume that the people that are well-educated and have access, and frankly, I have a lot of privileges, even though I'm talking about this, I can't speak for people who actually are going to use that grocery store. I can go to Wegmans, Whole Foods, anything that comes up in Rochester. We need to be talking to the people who actually will use something. And when you look at what's been successful down the line, we have things, we build things and they fail. We build things and they fail in Rochester. And we never look at the fact that we're not really building something that's inclusive to all the people in Rochester. You cannot just have a small amount of people support something when you have the draw of the suburbs.
You can't be inclusive without including the people you're talking about.
Right. From the beginning.
In the core group.
So you were part of the RFPs from the beginning, going back 3 years on this. In our last minute or so, from your perspective now, this process will be successful if what? It will fail if what? Ben?
I think this process will be successful if as many voices as we've begun to hear are recognized at an authentic and more of an official level with the powers that be. I think one of the hardest things up until this point is, while all of us have talked about our vision, our wishes, our hopes for this space, we don't have the decision of what to do there. And so to the city's credit, I'm very thankful to them that they are now pursuing a path that involves a potential public space there. I agree. I think that everyone needs to be at the table. I also think that we do need infrastructure improvements. I think the points about better connecting the city are huge, and the fact that the Inner Loop North RFP is out right now and how we connect to our northern neighbors, I think that's incredibly important because they should also be able to benefit from any amenity or quality of life consideration we create in the heart of downtown Rochester. That's also potentially one way to overcome the population density concerns. If you you can better connect our city, you have more people that are able to flow into Center City. It won't work if we ignore all of those things. We dictate an influential top-down approach and don't let the people that need to find a sense of belonging in downtown Rochester have that sense of belonging.
It was interesting. Even after the first arrests in the Morgan Company in Buffalo, and there was clearly something going on, the city of Rochester administration was holding to this idea of Parcel 5 and Morgan as going to be there until that became totally untenable. Where we go next, it will be very interesting, and we'll continue to bring in a wide range of voices. And I want to thank all of our guests for being here. You just heard Ben Welk, Mary Lupien, Rachel DeGuzman, Ray Matrano. Thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Short break. More Connections coming up.